We're back, Andrew. NBL Pocket Podcast, TBT Day 2. Another four games played today. But before we get into that, a bit of NBL news. We're going to go through the first of which being Nick Kay is no longer Perth Wildcat, no longer a member of the NBL. He's gone off to Spain. How did you take the news, Andrew?
Big news. Big news. You know I'm from Perth. And so therefore quite devastating, although not unexpected. I always anticipated that he was going to leave. It was, he made all the noises about wanting to go. As soon as he started to talk about in press conferences 3 days after he, and you know, had won the championship, about they and them as the team rather than we.
I heard
us.
All that.
I thought that was a,
I was surprised to see him go because I just thought, with the state of things, I thought while he had that ambition to play in Europe, I thought, oh, maybe with the situation, he might just take the secure money and when things are more secure, go to Europe at the end of next season, you know? But no, you got itchy feet and you really wanted to go. There's been rumors about the amount, and it's not an amount that I don't think the Wildcats couldn't have matched. So it really seems like this is what he and his management wanted to do from a sort of career development sense, more so than monetary, I think.
Yeah, I think so. If I put myself in his shoes, you know, you want to go test yourself against the best. He's proved that he is the best here in Perth and Australia. You know, he's done that. Mission accomplished.
I said he was the best local and people were like, oh, Mitch Creek and Chris Golding won't be happy. And I said, well, they can be unhappy all they want. Nick Kay's the best local in the NBL.
They can be happy this season because they can take the mantle back.
Now they are. Yeah, exactly. The other news, Xavier Cooks has opted back in with Sydney. He's returning. What was your reaction there? Do you think that Sydney now are bolstered? Are they a much better team? Is there a collective sigh by the Kings fans, do you think?
I think they're a better team with him in it. I think we need to see more from him this upcoming season than we saw in the last. He did some good things last year. He was a good rebounder.
For sure.
But really, he has a long way to go to sort of get to that marquee status, the reputation that came with him. He hasn't shown me that yet. But, you know, great young Australian to build around, and you wouldn't say no to him, right?
Absolutely not. I think nine rebounds per game. I think he was sort of top two or three, top five in the league. But he did play sort of like Obi Chai from Adelaide, but better.
That's a good comparison.
His offensive game, I was looking at his stats, 43% from the field, 13% from the outside. We were talking about this off air, like 13%, 47% from the foul line. Now, he had that knee injury. Maybe that's a big reason as to why these numbers are what they are. Wouldn't surprise me at all. But, 6.7 points per game, like that to be a starting power forward and a marquee player, like you say, those numbers have got it. That number's got to double, and those percentages have got to almost double as well, some of them.
Look, I've got bad knees and I'm carrying probably 10 or 15 kilos too many, but I reckon I could hit the court tomorrow and shoot, you know, 30% from the line and 15% from outside. Come on.
Here's a fun stat.
To do this.
Here's a fun stat. Went the last 2.5 months of the season without hitting a 3-point shot, 0 of 12 in the last 12 games of the season, including finals. If you're going to play, even if you're a wing or an inside player, you've got to hit from the outside in the modern NBL. Nick Kay certainly did.
Look, if you put him, combine him with Stevens from Southeast Melbourne, and you've got the ideal basketball player. You've got they're the inversion of one another at the moment.
Yeah, I agree.
There you go. There's your prototypical basketball player. Build them, merge them together, and you've got a guy that can do everything. At the moment, exactly. He's half a player.
The other thing I'll say quickly about Cooks, because I thought, maybe he'll play undersized center for them if Bogut doesn't return. 6'8 and lengthy, so probably can do it. He only weighs 85 kilos, apparently, according to NBL.com. That can't be right. That seems light.
That's got to be an old, out-of-date stat.
Brandon Ashley is ranked at 105 kilograms, 20 kilos heavier. Looking at their bodies, there wasn't 20 kilos in between them. No way.
No.
Anyway, let's jump to the TBT, Andrew. Day two, four games. I'll quickly list them. Peoria All-Stars, 65, lost to Heard That. Team Hines, 91-93, they lost to Sideline Cancer. Heartfire, 79-83, they lost to Men of Mackay. And then Armoured Athlete was probably the game of the day that we enjoyed, 98-91 over Power of the Poor. A reminder for people listening who have maybe not seen these games or only a bit of them, 9-minute quarters, Elam ending, $1 million prize money, and it's a win or go home type situation. You lose, you're out, you're in, you go on. What's amazing, I don't know if you heard it in the telecast both today and yesterday, Andrew, but was where all players, all teams have to pack their bags and bring them to the court. Did you hear that?
I did hear that. I saw that. And I saw photos on Twitter of bags packed.
Oh, it I haven't really seen that. That's great character.
It really is. It's basketball Survivor. And as a big fan of Survivor and Jeff Probst, yeah, like, can you ask for a better setup? It's just brilliant.
You've even got the placards with the team names on it. Not yeah. They don't hold them up to camera, but they put it up on the board. It's a good comparison. Other news, Ebelin Drive, hope I'm pronouncing that right. They're a team. They've had a positive COVID test, maybe one, maybe multiple. That's not disclosed. So that means they're out of the contest. They were set to play Brotherly Love. That's the team that features DJ Newball of the Taipans and Ramon Moore of the Sixers. They just immediately go through to the top 16. That Ebelin Drive team, that was the one that the team that Jerome Randall kind of made his name in this tournament with, and that former Wildcat, you can tell us about him, Andrew, Jaron Johnson played with. Do you remember him?
I do remember him. This may not be the first positive test he's been associated with. You can draw your own conclusions on that one. Jaron Johnson was a jump shooting small forward.
Yep.
Wildcats never really saw the best of him. He was the guy that got cut and rehired and then cut again. What an unfortunate career he had. Mm. So I don't ever expect to see him back in the NBL. I thought this might be one last chance to see him play ever in my life. That has been taken away from it from me and all the rest of us. But
it's too bad. Before we look at the notes of our games, of the four of them, I just want to quickly talk about the economics of sending a team to this thing, and in particular the NBL, the idea of them sending a team to this thing. I've been in touch with a couple of teams about, like, how does it work? I'm still figuring that out as to whether teams pay the bill for players to fly in and play, whether the players sort of put into a pot and take a risk and as a result get a greatest share of the winnings if they win. I haven't quite worked that out yet, but when I do, I will let you know. But I've been thinking about it, right? Let's say the NBL were to send a team, and regardless of who they sent, I want to look at the economics of it. A flight from Sydney to Columbus, Ohio, you're looking at about what? $2,500 return? Obviously, let's say in a non-COVID world, do you think that's fair, or is that underestimating that?
Yeah,
that
amount? That's I'm a bit dirty about airfares at the moment. I had a flight booked to go to the United States.
How much was that for?
Many months ago. The family. We used points and money, and it was about $6,000 for two adults and two kids. $6,000 plus some points. So I think you're on the money.
So say for maths, let's say 2.5 for fun. Let's say you take 10 people over there, 9 players and a coach. I think you don't need 10's too many, 8's too few, 9's a nice amount. So you're looking at $25,000 just to get everyone over there, and then accommodation, costs, travel. Let's say you double it. Do you think it costs $50,000 to get a team there, or am I underestimating it?
You're probably underestimating it, but it's a good round number, so let's run it.
Good round number for Matt. Let's say it's a little bit more. Who knows? I mean, that's $5,500 for each of the players if they all put in, and coaches, if the 10 of them put in $5,500 each or dock $5,500 from their salary, they're in the chance to win what is $1 million this year and traditionally $2 million, if I'm not mistaken, outside of COVID stuff. Would you risk $5,500 to win $2 million or a share of it anyway?
Yeah.
That's the question.
You know, let's put our business hats on, right? That you are making an investment in yourself as a player. You're getting a chance to go showcase yourself. How many agents would be watching this? How many teams are going to be watching it? If you have a good performance at this tournament, well, you've invested $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 in your next contract opportunity. So it's a good deal.
Good deal. And if the NBL said, all right, don't worry about the $5,500 each. We'll get you there. We'll pay whatever it costs. And they've got a sponsorship with Qantas and a few other things. So maybe the costs are actually not as bad. And then the NBL just takes, say, a 20% cut of the winnings if they win. And we are both of the opinion that not only a non, you know, if you took the first and second NBL teams, this is a route. But if you took sort of like a team of, if you took the best of the bench players from the NBL, plus maybe an import or two who are already over in the US, you're winning this thing. I have no doubt about it. And then Larry Kesselman's got, you know, say 20% of $2 million in his pocket. That's a decent exchange for what is 11 days work.
Yeah. And you're a lock to come back the next year to defend the title. So there you go. Have a, get your money.
And it's great exposure. You're half, it's a little bit of a toe in the NBA market. It's a bit of this, bit of that, but the prize money. And I would, if we put up a team, if we just took Machado, John Robinson, and then a bunch of bench guys who are quite good, I'd put a lot of money on that team winning it. And I'd be happily, I'd throw my ring in with an NBL team any day.
I would too. Happy to be their booster, as they call
the booster coaches. Exactly.
Boosters.
there's a blurring at this tournament between coach, booster, GM, and player. They sometimes, one person often wears many hats at this thing. It's kind of exciting. And for people, before we jump into the games, notes on each game, tomorrow there's only one game, which is both a surprise, maybe a relief to some. Golden Eagles play Team CP3. Neither team features an NBL talent, and that's on at 9 a.m. on the East Coast, 7 a.m. on the West Coast in Australia, and 8:30 if you're in Adelaide. So pretty good schedule to tune into on KO or ESPN if you're wanting to watch along.
And I think after 8 games in 2 days, I think we deserve a quiet
day. I am really welcome for the break. We are both agreed towards the end of this thing, we're a bit, the last couple of games, like, I'm enjoying it, but gee, 8 games in 2 days is a lot, isn't it? Now
you got to taper, you know, you can't just, I feel like I've just gone, you know, after doing no exercise, I've been enrolling in a marathon. I mean, geez,
it's like, you've heard of this, people who go through a famine, come out of it and then gorge themselves, and they actually end up getting really ill. Some even dying from overeating after a famine. It happens all the time. Trust me. Terrible. Let's jump into it. You've got notes. I'll let you take it off. The first game, if I'm not mistaken, was heard that the 23 ranked team versus Peoria All-Stars, the 10th ranked team. Andrew, what'd you make of it?
Loved it. Love this game. It was so all the games today were better than the ones we had yesterday.
Oh, it meant double, twice as good. Yep.
Yeah. What I loved about this team, or this contest, was that it was the ultimate rec center team.
Oh, I've got here a couple of chunky white guys, the brothers Elmore. It could be a movie in itself. Wow. And they were good.
I'm sure I've seen those dudes at Vic Park Rec Center. I think I played against them.
They're clones.
They bowled out. They were brilliant.
John in particular. And they were not bashful. Yeah. It wasn't like they were making up the numbers. They took, the shot chart was in their favor. Wow.
Yeah, they weren't shy. And I did hear the commentator at one point claim John Elmore as, sort of the high, well, he's got some scoring records in his college career or something. And I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And he was wearing number 33. So he had the Larry Birds.
Yeah, right. And the green jerseys, yeah.
Yep. But I love the way that the other brother, not the John Elmore, the other guy, he was just carrying too much weight. You know, he shouldn't have been out there.
25 kilos overweight. And he did airball. Like, he hit his first one and felt good about it, and then airballed a couple of others. And I was surprised to see him out there at the end, but they held on for the win. I think with John, what's important to remember with these Elmore brothers is they play for what college do they come from? Marshall. Oh, yeah. Marshall University. Yeah. The coach of that team is Dan D'Antoni, or at least has been at one point. So they play a very, well, Mike D'Antoni system, real up and down. And if you know Mike D'Antoni, I mean, he made Jeremy Lin look like a superstar. Point guards prosper in those systems. Mm. And I think John Elmore, as good as he was, and he's a nice little player, he certainly benefited from the freedom of the Dan D'Antoni system, presumably at Marshall, and certainly in this game. He had license to do whatever he wanted. And I think he ended up with like 10 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds, that typical D'Antoni point guard stat line. What else? Who else did you like?
Yeah, well, the great thing about this game and the next game actually is it made me feel like a genius, because I watched for sort of, you know, a minute or two, and I was like, right, that's my guy. I'm taking that guy. And it was Elmore. And then after that, he ripped out a couple of three-pointers, lobbed an alley-oop dunk, and I was like, geez, I'm just the ultimate scout here. So he made me feel good about myself.
Did you think much chop of the other team, Peoria All-Stars?
There was Taylor for number 25. He reminded me, the name was perfect, because he reminded me of Stormin' Norman Taylor back with the Hawks many, many years ago.
I remember this name,
when
yeah.
you were just a young boy, I imagine. And he was, you know, just a round mound, a rebound. You couldn't stop him. It was Taylor had that same sort of vibe to me for Peoria.
The other one I liked, I did quite like the scorer, Trayvon Allen. He just had a style about him. I worry because he put up huge numbers in college, but the team didn't win. I've actually got it written here. He played at Idaho, 6'2", 22 points per game in a season where they went 6 wins, 24 losses. So is he just a binge eater on scoring and can't do much else? I actually wouldn't agree with that assessment. I thought he just had a way on the court that actually looked good. He didn't overshoot it. He shot well. He picked his spots. He wasn't a ball hog. I quite liked him.
Yeah, I had him down for 25 points, 4-7 at three-quarter time. I don't know what he finished with, but that's a good line.
Yeah, good line at the quarter, and he definitely had sort of mid-20s scoring. I'm actually a little bit upset not to see more of him. The story of the last 2 days has been these combo guards, 6'2", 6'3 scorers who can really get big separation off the dribble. Like, these guys sort of get a pick, and their dribble to the left or right is like 2 feet. They just jump. It's crazy. What did you think of the big guy for Peoria, number 12, Aaron Menzies? He had a patch of play that I liked where he had good low post position. Almost he'd sealed this guy under the hoop. He was in the keyway. All they had to do was throw it to him. He didn't get it, and he just started cussing everyone out. And then the next play came down, he missed a dunk. I think it was in the second quarter. I can't recall.
Remember the missed dunk. I didn't notice him paying out and everybody else.
He had a bit of a gripe, bit of a snap at everyone. They were down at that point. They really got down and never came back. Heard that, just were a fast-paced team. And once they put up 10, 15 points, got a lead in a typical D'Antoni fashion. They built a lead. Yeah. The other team felt pressured to play fast to catch up, and that just played right into their hands, and they just kept going. What do you think of the two big guys from Heard That? Ja'Cory Williams and Zach Smith.
So massive. Your notes are copious compared to mine, my friend.
I thought
so much of them that I didn't make a note of them. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, one finished the game on the alley-oop, the dunk finish it, Zach Smith. The other one was player of the game. He had 20-some points on like 8 of 11 shooting, a nice lefty, 6'8 power forward from the G League, plays in Korea and Greece. That's Ja'Cory Williams. Ah, oh, man, just the athleticism on these two. Athletic bigs, a joy to watch.
Yeah, see, I love it when you get two different people watching a game like this, because they just didn't really register for me. I'm a bit disappointed in myself now, especially, I'm watching it, but I didn't make a note on them. Maybe I just took them for granted. Maybe I'm a bad watcher of basketball after all. Wow.
I think it was my first game. Is this the first one you watched?
It was, yeah. Yeah, okay. But it was, I'd just been in a 3-hour Zoom meeting for work, so maybe I can play
that. See, it's all situational, but yeah, Zach Smith had an alley-oop finish on this one that was just, it was spectacular.
Yeah, that was a great finish.
The big just tomahawk dunk. Yeah, I liked them both. What was the end score in this one? I've got it written here.
This was, we had this as
65-80.
80-65, yep. And it was 72-60 when Elam was triggered. It was interesting. It seemed like nobody wanted to win for a long period of time. The Elam ending seemed to go on.
It was
for
one
a while.
Of the most prolonged Elam endings we've seen in the tournament so far, for sure.
But we should note that Peoria was a fill in for Jimmy V. Team that were COVID positive. So,
a theme, the beat was going to be on that Jimmy V team, I believe, the former number 2 pick, I think, 7'3" kid.
Yeah, was he 2 or 1? This is.
I think he was now. 2.
But he was overrated, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Never did anything.
Sad fact of life. Have you got any other notes on this one?
No, I'm done.
No, done. Let's go.
I enjoyed it. Great start.
Yeah. Oh, great start. This after the first day's play, I was kind of like, oh, geez, I hope this gets off to a good start. And it did. That was a fun game. It had storylines. No complaints. Next game of the day was Team Hines and Sideline Cancer. Team Hines going down on this one. Team Hines featuring Eric Griffin. And who was the other one?
Marcus Thornton.
Marcus Thornton, former Sydney King. Going down 91-93 to Sideline Cancer. What'd you make of it?
I had more notes for this game. Look, if the first game was good, this one was great.
I was eager for this one. Yeah.
It was so much fun. I was bought into it. It was really cool to watch. Really interesting to see both the NBL guys starting and really being the standouts in many ways for their team, particularly Eric Griffin, as key guys for the team. And that, I think this backs up our argument. I mean, well, Eric Griffin, he was good in the NBL, serviceable, but he wasn't all-star level, was he?
No, not even close. If you would put him in, you'd be struggling to put him in the top 20 in the NBL last year.
Yeah. And he was, they were raving about him. He was, flying up and down the court like he does.
His athleticism was real elite. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, he played well. And I think that bodes well for our argument that we need to get an NBL team over their stat.
For sure. I think I was eager to watch him. I was like, he had a bad year at Adelaide. I was like, okay, let's see. This is your chance now to prove that the talk of being reckless, the foul discipline, let's see if that was a product or a symptom of, not fitting in with Joey and others. Let's see what it is. If I had to say to you, did Eric Griffin from his performance in this game, swim upstream against the criticisms he had last year? What do you think?
You must be looking at my notes. I've got one here that says Griffin still foul prone.
Oh, terrible. And in the worst way. I've got him in my notes. I took note of it. So he gave up two fouls that, to say they cost Team Hines the game would be an overstatement, but they were not pretty. They were not good. They didn't help at all. One was particularly egregious. What have I got here? The score 87-86. So within the Elam ending.
Yep.
Eric Griffin didn't get the ball on offense, kind of dogged it down the floor, giving up rebounding position. That guy didn't get the rebound, but Joy had his hands to it first. Griffin gave him a push in the back. And, when you foul off the ball in this game, it's a free throw and possession. So it's like the worst thing you can do. And he did it. And then he committed an over-the-back foul on offense at the score 88-86. So he gave up these two bad fouls that you give up a shot and the ball, and each time they made the free throw. Yeah.
And this is the thing, he has these moments of brilliance and spectacular play. Like early in the game, I don't know if you saw in the corner, a step back corner three.
Oh, massive.
That was and one.
Or stepped over the guy almost. Yeah, unreal.
So he has these.
And the weak side blocks. Like he came out of nowhere. He had five blocks in this game.
But then he undoes all that good work with, just brain explosions. And I think I think that's what Joey Wright always had the issue with. He just couldn't trust him in that moment.
Couldn't trust him. Trust is the exact word I've got here. I said trust underlined with a question mark. And when it comes to winning time, I don't think he can play on the floor because he can't trust him not to foul, not to, an over the back on an offensive rebound when you know that you give up a shot and possession. You cannot. If it was a team foul situation where it doesn't matter, it's a side ball, not as egregious. But under these circumstances, you got to know where you're playing at. Drove me mad.
Yep. Yeah, I would not sign him to my Perth Bandits team.
No, neither, unfortunately.
Who I would sign. I've got a signing though. Signing alert. Oh, yeah. Diamond Stone. Seriously. The best name in the competition so far. Yeah. Diamond Stone. The commentators actually mentioned that he played with Mello Trimble.
They did. Mello Trimble got a mention. Yep.
So yeah, but I like the look of that guy. He sort of faded towards the end, and that he looked a little out of condition. I think fair.
Yeah, he's just the definition in his arms wasn't there.
No, but I liked what he showed. He's sort of that inside outside kind of worker. He's
6'11".
His shot didn't look stylish. 3-point
shooter. No, it had an odd action, didn't it?
It went in. Yeah.
He was actually a former draft pick of the Pelicans. Plays in Israel. Really? Yeah, a decent sort of an enticing player. Inside, outside, sort of a Daniel Johnson semi-clone. I don't think he's that as reliable from the outside as Daniel Johnson. But yeah, certainly
probably
the name What did you think of the guy Ethan Happ for Team Hines?
He was the other guy that I wrote down. I liked him a lot. He reminded me of a if the Wildcats need a replacement for Nick Kaye, they could do worse than getting that guy.
You know, this is exactly the question I had for you. This is exactly the question I had for you. I said, if the Wildcats announced that he was the Nick Kaye replacement, would you be content, pleased, or upset?
I'd be very pleased. I think he probably doesn't have quite the same level of polish.
No.
But he's powerful. You see the gun show on him, right? Jeez.
Yeah, big, strong, and motor on him too, and moved his feet well, defender, scorer, passed a little bit of range, bit inside. Yeah, really. And I thought he was a Wildcat if ever I saw one where, like offensive rebounder, you know, no boneheaded mistakes from this kid. I really liked him. And by the way, he's a free agent. He was playing. I looked him up. He was playing in Italy. Signed with a Greek team who then loaned him out to Italy. 18 points per game and 9 rebounds in the top Italian league, which is where Angus Brandt plays. He doesn't put up numbers like that. But again, European numbers, you never know. And he's been let out of his contract. He's a free agent. Interesting.
There was a play he was involved in. I made a note of it in the third quarter. And he set a screen. Then he rolled off that. He received the ball, drilled a pass that ended up in a 3-point shot. He just showed every quality of a big man that you wanted in that single sequence. I thought that's nice. So
I want to quickly go back to Griffin. Oh, for sure. I want to quickly go back to Griffin. I haven't quite done landing on Eric Griffin. Apologies. Would you say, I've got it written down here, Eric Griffin's game is based 100% on his athleticism. Did you, like, just his footwork around the keyway, like, were you watching that where he just get off balance in the paint so easily, where he'd catch it in a post-up situation and just get bumped off his feet? Did you feel that?
Yeah, he's always been kind of weak in that regard.
Yeah, like he gets pushed off.
He has interesting footwork because he has a lot of spin moves. So I wouldn't say his footwork's bad, but he's compensating balance, maybe, by being able to jump high, you know, and you can get away with a few sins when you can do that.
The other guy Andrew, you were saying?
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
The other guy I liked was for sideline cancer, player of the game, you would say. Do you know who I'm going to say? Marcus Keane.
Yes.
The guard. Yeah. He went crazy. Top scorer for the game. I think he could have had in the 30s. I'm not too sure. Wow.
He had 20. I wrote it down. 29, 6, and 6.
And was just under 6 feet. If he was 5'10", I'd be surprised. Just created this amazing separation off the dribble. This is the guy I'm talking about. He'd get a pick. He'd come off it to, say, go into his left. And when he went to gather, he'd just take this gather step that was like, he just leap like 2 meters to the left, and then that man nailed these sort of fadeaway shots. I thought I love players like that. He was sort of a Mellow Trimble-ish kind of player. I loved him.
He was fast as well. He could accelerate.
Oh, he was super quick.
You know, and really get to the basket. When he first, I was watching it, and he didn't jump out to me at first. I thought, who's this guy? You know, maybe he thinks he's a better shooter than what he is, but I think he was just playing the percentages because by the end of it, he was dominant.
Oh, absolutely. He had 7 straight points, I think, in the third quarter to kind of end it, to set them up to be within sniffing room of a tie or a head for the Elam ending. I thought he was
he hit the Elam ending winner, right?
He sure did, yep.
Is that stepped off that he actually put our guy Happ. switched onto him. It was like, oh, it's not going well.
I knew it was going to happen. That was a great last shot. One guy I want to talk about, number 5, Gilbert Brown for Hines, missed 2 free throws and then had a bad turnover in the 4th to give sideline cancer the lead going into the Elam ending. It was a bad, bad connection of plays for him to miss the 2 free throws. Then he had a sort of a jumping, jump to make a pass turnover. And then they got the lead going into the Elam end. It was just bad, bad day for him. I thought that was I also thought Eric Griffin, talking about, like, you know, he was a good player here. At the score was 84-82, got called for a block, a foul on a blocking attempt that under the hoop. Do you remember this one?
Yes.
On a fast break attempt? I thought he was unlucky.
Yeah, I did too. That seemed like there was a couple of officiating calls today that I was a little mystified by. And I gave the refs a big rap yesterday. A couple today that I wasn't so sure about, particularly around the goaltend tap off the rim stuff as well. But yeah, that he was hard done by on that call, I thought.
I agree. What was that? Yeah, I've pretty much got my other – oh, the thing that I most want to talk about is no Nick Calathes for Team Hines. Now, I don't know whether he was refused into the bubble with a medical thing, but he would have made a huge difference, I feel. Mm. He plays on the Greek national team, so naturally he would have made a difference, but he wasn't there.
So, Joe, you calling this an upset? Is this an upset in your mind, or is it just a result?
Honestly, I mean, Team Hines ranked 11th, Sideline Cancer 22. I just feel like I thought it was an upset until I got a good look at Marcus Keane. And I thought, because when I saw they had Griffin and Marcus Thornton, I was like, wow, they've got pros. But Marcus Keane plays in Korea. But yeah, I'd still kind of call it an upset. Outside of him, I don't think that team had a lot. They kind of had an unruly sort of play to them. And they just hit shots. They hit threes from the outside and came back. Yeah, I'd call it an upset. Why not? Would you?
There you go. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I didn't expect them to win. I think, you know, the basketball gods shined on them today. I'm not certain it will happen again.
No. I think conditions need to be perfect for this team to win, and I wouldn't be banking on them next time. Question for you, Andrew, just about the whole tournament. Do you like the, and I hope I'm getting this right, in the fourth quarter when you foul off the ball, it's a one shot and a possession. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, you mean the entire fourth?
Or is it just the Elam ending?
I think it's just the Elam ending, right, as far as I'm aware, that if you foul, any foul in an Elam ending situation, as long as it's not shooting, is one possession.
How do you like it?
It almost reminds me of the old days of the one-on-one.
One-on-one, make one to get one, make one to get two, yeah.
Which was always great. So I think this is just the modern interpretation of that. I think it's good. I think it discourages fouling because it's really absolutely...
Yes, anything to discourage off-ball fouling, especially like ticky-tack stuff. So, like don't, if a guy's going down the court, let him progress. You can't just reach in and grab him. Yeah, I like it.
Just on the Elam stuff as well, the one thing that I'm sort of a little bit uncertain about, undecided about how I feel, is... You get these teams and they almost seem to avoid the two. Now,
this is a question I had for you. Was it this game where, no, it was a different game. Hang on, which one was it?
This is what happens when you have four games in a day. They all blur into each other.
It was, I think it was this game.
I think it might have been.
Oh, yeah, here it is. At 89-91, the target was 92, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, and I think it was still Sideline Cancer that were up. Do you force the three or take the two? You know what I mean? Like, let's say that the team Hines was down 89, the target is 92. They need to hit a three to win this. So you could just defend the three-point line, let them lay it up. I'm not describing this particularly well, but yeah, what do you think about that? Where, how do you negotiate that last couple of points when it's a 3 and 5 to the target? Like, do you go for 2 threes? Do you go for 2 twos? Yeah, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, you got to play what they give you, right? But I think there's too much of a tendency to just try and bang away from three and get the win and walk off. I reckon back your defense, although maybe this is the wrong tournament to be saying that. But if you can get an easy two, one stop. I mean, come on, I would like to see the numbers on that. The numbers on a one stop would probably be reasonable. I think trust yourself to lock in the easy two and then you can have another crack at it. I don't think
you're saying
if it's not wide, relatively wide open, don't force that three.
So let's say this. Scores are knotted at 89. You're the coach of a team. Scores are knotted at 89. The target is 93. Are you saying to your team two or three or whatever they give you? But you're more saying go for the two and if the three comes up, take it.
That's right. Know. So you're still needing I'm saying, go inside. At least give me an inside out. Don't just perimeter pass.
At least give me an inside out. Yeah, okay. I would agree. I think
Trevor Gleason's rubbing off on me. This is scary stuff.
I think that it is, and you can see players thinking about it when they're like, oh, it's 89-90, we need three to win. Should we go two? There is a bit of clumsiness when it gets to that situation. I do agree.
But I like that as well. That's cool when you can almost see the cogs turning as they think, oh, what do I do here? I don't know.
It's almost like that situation, like in a normal game where, you know, you're down three and they're giving you the layup and you see some guys take the layup for their stats. I think Eric Griffin actually, we've piled on Eric Griffin, but I think he was guilty of that a couple of times where, you know, it's like, oh, I've got a lane, but it's like, yeah, but we need three. There's a bit of that. So yeah, that's one thing about the Elam ending that needs a bit of ironing up. Happy to jump on to the next one? Or have you got something more?
Yeah. Oh, so I've got, yeah, I've just made a couple of generalized points. This game, watching this game, was the one that had me actually wanting to head out to the rec center and put some shots up. There was just something about the shot making in this game and the way they were passing through the net. You get that nice swish sound. And I was like, oh, I just want to go shoot a basketball now.
You know,
I hadn't had
that
feeling until this game.
I had it with The Last Dance, and this game, yeah, particularly Marcus Keane, I just really like to watch him play. He really snapped the wrist. And to be honest, even in the first game as well, what was his name? Trayvon Allen. I liked the way both of them kind of scored and the way they – all their shots came off the dribble. Real gym rat style. Yeah, no, I can agree with that.
And that led me to one other point. I was thinking about it. I was thinking that net set does sound really nice. And yes. I suddenly realized that is a problem in the NBL. The NBL has terrible ring equipment, if you want to call it that. Every venue has a different style of rim. They have different nets. None of them look particularly attractive.
None of them make a great sound.
And none of them make a sound. And I just think if you want to talk about just getting the fundamentals right, you need to mic up your rims. And you need to have the right sort of rim and net so it sounds right when a ball goes through.
You need a real tearing of the net sound. Yeah. Yep. You need it to crack. And this, they've done it with this. Obviously, ESPN have got it down to a fine art. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And if we go into this new NBL season and I see a basketball rim on an NBL game that has chipped paint on it, it happens all too well. I think New Zealand were guilty of it last year.
Illawarra as well.
Hawks, I think, have had that problem in the past. Paint your rims. You've got 6 months. The paint will dry.
You know, and even you could go into Bunnings and say, listen, can I just have a small sample? They do give out paint samples to you can take home and check. And all you need is a lick of paint. Literally, you need a thimbles full of paint to get it done. No. Fair point. Have you got any other notes?
One other note, just on the telecast.
Yeah, do it.
You'll notice they're using one, basically one sideline camera. There's no baseline camera. There's no backboard camera. And are we missing anything?
Yeah.
No. That's the way you telecast basketball.
Good point. There's a few close-ups when they step back on the floor and things like that. And then there is a sort of low baseline angle. They've obviously got maybe a guy at either end sitting there at sort of foul line extended who takes a bit of thing. But yeah, you're very right. There is no
baseline
angle.
It's not constant switching, you know? It's just... Good Here's point. Your camera. And Matt, you're right. A couple of switches, but it's simple. And this is what we always try and we overcook it in Australia with the NBL. Trying to switch the camera, show the crowd, show this guy, zoom in on that guy. Now just give me a sideline camera, please.
You know, here's another abstract thought. I mean, I watched MasterChef. I don't know if you watched the show.
Where's this going?
Well, just the use of music. Like I think Hitchcock says it, like music sets tone, like something suspenseful because the soundtrack's suspenseful. If you took away the music from a scene of a film, it wouldn't have what it has. And I'm kind of like, when the Elam ending kicks in, can you imagine if like a suspenseful soundtrack ticked in just quietly underneath, just for the casual fan to understand like, all right, that's the tone. That's what's happening now. Because a lot falls on the commentators to build that energy, especially without a crowd.
There is a... There's an audio effect they do use in cinema, and I cannot remember the name of it for the life of me now. But they
the Wilhelm scream.
That's another good one though. Maybe you play that when somebody makes a turnover. This is like it's a note that sounds like it is constantly going up in pitch, but it actually is recycling. So
like
it always feels like things are getting. Yeah, and they use it in war movies and things like that to create tension because you feel like this, the pitch is rising and rising, but it's actually not. It's a aural illusion.
Constant note.
I'll have to look it up.
But the use of music, sports, they do it during the break and things. Actually, while we're on the telecast, one thing I do love is, you know, have you heard the courtside announcer who's actually in the stadium for some strange reason? Like, so a tour we score and they'll be like, Eric Griffin with the two. And he's got a tone that's very similar to, you know, if you watch like a Disney movie where for some reason two high school kids have decided to like have a dance off and for some reason there's a commentary team there, you know, in these Disney movies when they do that. And this guy's there is like, oh my, Eric, here we are. Waterbury High School's going to the he has that kind of tone. And I'm like, nah, lose that. That's not gonna do it for me. Have you heard him?
Who is he announcing for? Who needs that information?
It's an empty the players stadium. Don't need it. There's no one there. I found that perplexing. I found it kind of charming, but also I wouldn't have had that. Oh dear. That was about it. And then the other funny thing about American shows is every sponsor has their own tagline. So it's like and it's completely unrelated to the product. They'll be like TJ Brandy, you know, live hard to live good or something, which makes no, it's always more often than not a double negative. That's like, it's hot to keep you cool. It's like, all right, cool. And they all have these little taglines, which is kind of funny. That's my. Any other notes?
Love it. No, that's it. I'm done for that one.
Game three. Mena Mackay, ranked 19th versus Heartfire, ranked 14th. Heartfire amazingly losing this game 79-83. Your notes, Andrew, please.
I've got a confession to make. I tapped out on this game. I watched the I skipped this one, left it to last, and then thought, mm-hmm. I'm going to just watch this as an Elam ending.
Yep.
Because I didn't really care about
the watched players. The last half only. This was the last day, right. The one I watched. While it was the third game of the day, it was the one I watched last. I only watched the second half. I just, not because it was a bad game, I just reached my point. Yep.
And I think this is it. I think you and I have both figured out that three games is our maximum three exposure games. For basketball in a single day.
What do they call it? A point of diminishing returns after that.
So I couldn't do it, but I thought, well, let's do a scientific experiment. Let's watch this game as a normal person who thinks, I'm just going to watch and see who wins, because people always say, hey, basketball doesn't matter until the last minute of the game,
interesting,
right?
Interesting experiment. How'd it go?
So let's watch the Elam ending and nothing else. And it's really cool. It's a great way to watch the game. So I had no idea of who was been playing well up to that point. I didn't know. So the things I noticed were in order of my noticing, basically, I've got 3 points, I think. The uniforms for men of, what are they? Men of Mackay?
Mackay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mike Mackay. I know how he feels now.
They were from Purdue University. Let's go with that. Purdue alumni.
Those uniforms were not good. It is, talk about an unflattering color. Wearing the gold
champagne
top.
Champagne goldy. Yeah. No, not going to work.
As a white guy representative, you don't want to be wearing that color. It's just not so good.
It's reminiscent of those old Washington Wizard alternates from 10 years ago, if you're playing at home.
Yeah, yep. They were more shiny though, weren't they? This was phase.
This was like matte finish. It wasn't going to work.
No. Haas. That guy is a tree.
He's huge. Massive.
Like, his legs were just chunky as I don't know how tall he was, but he had to be a 7-footer.
Yeah, he was big, real big. And I mean, I watched from the second half when he only went on to the sort of danger man for Heartfire, Isaiah Austin, in the last couple of minutes. The commentators made a big deal of this. Did you agree with their assessment? I mean, did you see a little bit of him without Haas guarding him?
I didn't really know, they just had
4 points to start the fourth, was looking dangerous, and then they made that switch, and thereafter I think he had two, and you know, missed a couple of shots, right. Made a couple of bad plays too,
so that was a difference maker.
I felt the commentators were correct in that. He's known he can be prone to a bit of hyperbole, the Billy Knight, former Billy Knight assistant, but on this occasion I thought, yeah, that was a pretty fair assessment.
Yeah. That's the guy that sounds like Steve Ballmer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, God, his accent drives me crazy. But he probably said the same about mine, so fair enough.
And you go, Andrew?
Yeah, my last note, the tip off the rim. Now, do you remember the one that was a bit controversial?
I do. What do you think? Like, I found that odd because it's this thing is just a blurring of rules. Takes a bit of FIBA, a bit of NBA. What do you think? Should they have that rule?
Well, I don't mind the rule. I quite like the FIBA interpretation of it, but I think they got it wrong. So my understanding of it, because they said, oh, it was on the rim, so you can tap it off. That was kind of what
they thought. You thought it was in the cylinder?
I thought it was inside the cylinder, and I don't think that's a rule. Either they don't have that element of the rule or they are misinterpreting the rule. Because
there's,
I think,
also
it was
another thing where
cylinder.
It's a different relationship, because also it says you can't do it off a free throw because the keyway is not as wide. Like, that was one ruling that just, I didn't know what to make sense of it. Like, it wasn't quite the FIBA rule. It wasn't the NBA rule. It was a hybrid for TBT because the keyway isn't a certain measurement. I was like, nah, you've lost me. Just either you can or you can't tap it off the rim. Let's just make it that one.
Yeah. So look, I'm going to say that, you know, based on my, I haven't read the rules. I'm going to say they were wrong. There it is.
Okay.
Wrong call.
Yeah. If you're going to say
wrong
something,
say but I love the fact that the Mena Makai, I love the win. I love the Elam ending finish. Mm. The sort of the come from behind approach.
Oh man.
Awesome to watch as a 4 minute game of basketball.
Yeah. I'm glad to see that you did that experiment, because that is something like, can you come into an Elam ending and still enjoy this game? Well, I watched from the second half, as I said, going into the fourth, it was 55-65 in favor of Heartfire. They looked to be controlling this one. And yeah, it was that guy, Isaiah Austin, who was doing all the damage. If you remember him, he suffers from Morfan syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder. He was the one who was ceremoniously drafted by the NBA, like not a team, right, but the actual NBA itself in a couple of years ago in the draft. 7'1", 26 years old out of Baylor, retired at that point, was not medically fit to play basketball, and only just recently got cleared to play basketball, and he's playing in Puerto Rico and actually seemingly doing pretty well. He had an interesting moment. This is a bit of a like storyline that I saw here. He'd made a score, and this was before Haas was guarding him, and he was at the foul line. He'd made either made a play and got fouled and was going there for two. And guys were kind of like saying, oh, you know, our coach is not letting us check you. Like, he's putting this player on you. If I guarded you, you'd be in big trouble. So then Isaiah Austin's at the line, and he's going, well, check me then. And he's cussing. You can hear him cuss on the mic. He's going, well, F you, check me then. Check me. And he's like, it's real trash going on. And then eventually he wasn't saying that to Haas, who eventually got the matchup and did kind of shut him down. He was talking to someone else, but I thought that was a fun little moment there that I wish I could clip up if I was doing highlights. I've got a name for you, Andrew.
Okay.
Justin Dentman. Do you know who I'm talking about? 33 points for Mena Makai.
Yeah. It's unreal. I obviously didn't see the most of those points, but, you know,
did he hit the winner?
He
Haas did.
But Dentman was the guy that did all the damage, you know,
all the damage.
And he was, another story of these sort of nuggety little guards that just seem to be able to dominate this tournament. You know,
shorter guards around that sort of 6 feet to 6'2", wide across the shoulders. Yeah, they're, I don't know what it is, they're dominating.
Yeah, he was a handful. He reminded me of Keen from the
precisely.
Sideline cancer game. Yep.
Funny one from this, the Heartfire coach. Do you hear him speak? He had this real sort of, it was like a character out of King of the Hill. I don't know if you watched that cartoon or not. Real Southern, real softly spoken. And did you see the moment? You would have. The score was at 81-79. The coach took a timeout as Isaiah Austin hit a three just after the whistle went. Do you remember this play?
Yeah. Yep.
And he hit the three, and then the commentator's like, I knew when he caught it, he was going to shoot it. And he sort of did take this wild shot out of sort of anger.
Yep.
And the body language was terrible. I felt like, if I had to ask you this question, Andrew, why do you think this Heartfire team lost this game after leading by 10 going into the fourth? And I think they were even up by maybe 6 or 8 points going into the Elam ending. Do you remember what the score was at the start of the Elam ending?
Did I make a note of it?
They were up
77-71.
That sounds about right. So they're up 8 points going into the Elam ending in the last 4 minutes. If you had to diagnose why they lost, what would you say?
I would say that I didn't see much team spirit or commitment to the group.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Yeah, that's how, you know, in my short watch, that's what I saw. They didn't seem to have a lot of care factor really bringing in.
What's weird is they seem to show it before that. And then this last couple of minutes came and they really wilted. To be honest, I put it down to this: overcoached. I felt like instead of just letting it flow, and I know this is an easy thing to say because the commentators mentioned how they took that time out and he made the three after the call and then he was begrudging of that. But I felt like this is a tournament where when you're you know, in the Elim ending and maybe you're down two or up two, the timeout, you want to take it, but at the same time, like, you don't want to be running plays. Like, it is it's a big ball tournament. It's just who's going to make big shots. It's isolation play. If you try and bring order to this scramble, you're going to get done in. And I really felt that was the problem with Heartfire. I thought they were overcoached.
It's a good insight. So you need Phil Smythe coaching a team.
Yeah, you need to give these guys free. Every game we've seen is one-off confidence. A guy gets hot, you feed him, you go for it. The games are too quick to kind of try and rein it in. It doesn't work. And I felt like that's what cost Heartfire. They were the first team that I've really seen with like an older, I'm going to say crusty coach. The other coaches have either been player coaches or a bit younger or less involved. Like, I haven't seen a coach call timeout. This guy was like, you could hear him on the sideline, like, oh, run the horn set now. It didn't play. Didn't work. That was what I thought anyway.
Wow.
That was me. Any other notes?
No. That is
Let's go on.
It for me.
Let's go to game four.
Right. This is
Our team. This is the team that's been nicest to us. We commented. I was sat in on the press conference, which was done by Zoom, which every sporting league in the world should be taking a look at. It's fantastic. Here I was sitting in Australia. I didn't ask a question. Well, I typed a question to Machado and John Robertson. They were sitting there. It was great. This was Power of the Poor, 18th ranked, versus Armored Athlete, ranked 15th.
NBL Podcast's own Armored Athlete.
Yes, I think we should make that clear. They are a team I have signed up to. I've predicted them to. I think I could actually win some money if they get through the tournament. I feel like some bracket many moons ago. This is the team that features John Robertson and Machado. Andrew, take it away. What do you think?
Well, it all started off. It was like, finally, the NBL is getting the recognition it deserves because they did the player profile of Machado at the beginning. And then they talked about Robertson as the, you know, his offsider, and the two of them are going to be a great backcourt.
Mm.
And then no mention of the NBL. You know, it was mentioned that Machado, I think it was Robertson, you know, playing out of Turkey or what country he's played in the intervening period or something. It's like, I can't even get a shout out to the NBL in this one. But God, doesn't it show the quality of having a good point guard?
Oh,
like
Machado.
I mean, between terrific. But they both played a bit of point, but Machado basically controlled the show. And the pace of this game was so different to all the others.
Yeah, it was what was the end control. Score? I've got it here. 98-91 for the highest of.
Correct.
Yeah. Today and yesterday, Robertson came out on fire, as I knew he would. You knew defenses weren't going to have scouted terribly closely, and he hit his first, couple of shots. He had a couple of threes before he even knew it. He was exactly what he was at NBL 20 in the first 5 minutes of this game and beyond it. I think I have their combined stats. Robertson and Machado combined for 49 points, 17 of 25 from the field, 9 assists, and only a couple of turnovers.
It's the story of the game. They controlled the game so well. Robertson just went to his spots. Machado found him. They had a couple of other players who were stepping in and did what was required of them. It was just, even when they sort of lost momentum, I never felt fearful that they were going to lose.
They did lose momentum in that third quarter, though.
They did. I liked, the big guy, Gilbeck, as well.
Got foul trouble.
Hard shows. He was running. Yeah, but he was running out. And, I haven't seen a hard show, as a big guy coming out past the three-point line this entire tournament. It just took me by surprise. I like that. They're going to go a long way. As long as they shoot well, they're in.
Yeah, I worry about that.
To me. Well, and imagine this team with the players they were meant to have. My goodness.
Imagine if you added Tarico White and Cotton to the mix. Yeah, I don't worry about size in this tournament, especially if you could team with Gilbert, who was big enough. I think the sad fact is they now play number two overseas elite. That's DJ Kennedy. They've won this thing 4 of the 5 years. They're not only talented, but they've played together. It's they may as well play him next up because that, you know, you got to play him at some point. What did I like about this one? Robertson, did you ever think he got exploited a little bit on defense by bigger bodies? Like there are occasions where when he got open, he hit shots, but his ability to create off the dribble at the hoop was not there.
No, no. Look, I think you're always going to give up something with somebody that small. But I think, you know, on the balance, I think he still gives you more than you lose.
I agree.
You know, and I think that's where you need a few, if you could, there's a team that might need a couple of, you know, help defensive schemes. If Robertson gets posted up at any point, you need to come help.
Yeah. One thing, worry I do have about this armored athlete, the bench, and I mean the real bench, guys. There were three players that played less than 10 minutes. They were a combined 3 of 10, two turnovers, -8 in the plus minus. Everyone else was a plus. There's not a lot of depth on this team. Their five is good. I kind of forget the names of the other two guys, but Mobley and Hicks are the names of the two who they're making up the numbers, and I'm sure they're nice-ish players. Maybe they will improve, but they didn't seem to show it. You've got to play through Machado and Robertson almost exclusively. Machado in particular. When the game – Robertson top scored, but when the game was on the line, it was like Machado. I remember he did that Hakeem Olajuwon show and go type move where he showed it and spun the other way and laid it up.
Yeah.
As we knew he would coming into this tournament, looked at the score, looked at who was on the court with him and just made the play for them or himself. That guy's absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. And I think again, yeah, let's reflect back on the NBL for a minute, if I can.
You may.
I just think this shows us what an excellent league we have to watch week in, week out. The fact that those two guys just, you know, took that game by the scruff of the neck and dealt with it.
They were embarrassing, guys. Like Robertson got open three times, bang, bang, three points, they're up. No, it was clear cut, like, oh, who are those two? They're the best we've seen in the last 2 days, let alone wherever. It is a good reflection of the NBL.
They had some good games in the NBL, no doubt. But there were games when they got locked down. You know, they couldn't get off. We see some really excellent talent. And I think that's probably – I don't think we – Australians don't like to realize sometimes, I think, how good it is. There's always talk of, oh, yeah, well, we're nowhere near the NBA. Well, nobody is. Yeah, well, there's always Europe. It's so much better. Well, actually, maybe it isn't. You know, I think we're so far away and we sort of are always a bit down on ourselves. I think sometimes you've got to say, no, this is a world-class league that we get to watch and Australians are bloody good at basketball these days. You know, I think we should be proud of it.
Yeah, I got a sense that, yeah, like the NBL, when an NBL player is walking around at the TBT, there should be worry and fear in opponents, especially the likes of Machado and Robertson. And I think I would love to have seen Tariqo White at this thing. I think he would have absolutely destroyed with his outside shot, with his like sort of lack of dribble play where he just takes two dribbles and a jump shot. I think he's a perfect TBT player. One question I do have for you now is, it's kind of like, should they have sandbagged a bit? Robertson came out, shot like crazy. He's now got a rap. People know like, oh, that's John Robertson. Don't go under screens on him. Don't let him, you know, make him put it on the deck. The question I have going into that next game against overseas elite is, will defenders give him the space he had in this game? That's one question. The second question is, will he get his shot off regardless? That's the big question for someone of his sort of size and his game style. I'll be looking for that really closely whenever they play their next.
Yeah, and I think he's been short his whole life. I think he's learned how to ball.
He does get loose. He does just get loose on occasion and get open. Yeah,
he's one of those crafty guys, and it's just almost frustrating to guard those tiny little guys. They're constantly moving around. They got the little head fakes that they'll throw at you, and that you just can't stay with them because they're too damn small.
He's so quick. He's got these sort of bubble moves where he doesn't actually, like he shakes his body a lot in a small space and then kind of explodes out of it. I don't know how best else to describe that.
I know what you mean though. And he has these little, that little mid-range game he's got. It's you know.
Oh, he just doesn't miss.
I think, no. And he really feathery touch as well. You know, they sort of, they'll tend to bounce around the rim if they don't go straight in. You know, he's not getting hard, you know, long rebounds off his shots.
That is something for the big guys on that team to think about. Did you have any other notes?
I do not. Interesting, I should point out power of the paw. Mm-hmm. Just nobody jumped out at me in that entire team. I
felt they had some knucklehead play too. There was a time when a guy threw his head back and clocked Machado. There's a couple of hard fouls that Robertson got hung up, you know, coming down the lane. It was almost like a flagrant situation. It wasn't a flagrant, but Robertson got really bear hugged on his way to the hoop. A few other little plays like that you could tell their prerogative was, we're not as skillful, we're going to smack people around a little bit.
Yeah,
I agree. No one stood out for me. And even the guy who made a lot of shots for them, Josh Okoyan, I think was his name, headband guy, he had a couple of shots. Yep. I still felt his shots were like reckless, you know, whereas Robertson was more, you know, picked his spots. I think Okoyan just kind of got hot a little bit. Good player, no doubt, but not the sort of structure to his game that certainly the better scorers in the TBT have displayed. That's what I thought.
Yep.
Andrew, that brings us to the end of the four games. 2 days done. We get a break tomorrow-ish. As I said before, Golden Eagles, Team CP3. CP3 have already played in the tournament. I forget their game now, but I think they kind of just made it through.
76-74, against primetime players.
9 a.m., casual little watch on KO or ESPN. Andrew, that's it. All I've got. Have you got anything, any parting words?
No, just keep, I hope you're enjoying the game. It's going to get more intense now. Keep watching, keep enjoying.
And I think we'll be able to be more attentive. Like if there's only two games, we'll be able to watch them more intently. Because when there's four, you have to spread yourself so thin. It's hard to be as incisive with the analysis. But nonetheless, I hope people are enjoying it.
Yeah, I hope so too. I know I am. Basketball's back, baby.
It's back. Andrew, until next time. Tomorrow. Ciao.